Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear. I'm Susan Larrison Dance, and today is Saturday, February 10th, 2024. And this show airs live every Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio. And you can find out all about this show at frontierbeyondfear.com. Today, I am considering a change that's going forward for many shows, in fact, any show that is an Apple podcast going forward will now have transcribing. And this is a really interesting thing for me to work with because this program, as those of you who have been listening to it for a while would know, is very spontaneous and unscripted, and very rarely, in fact, only one time that I can think of, because a guest made a transcript, has it been transcripted? And so now I need to welcome those of you across time who are reading my words and not hearing them. It also tends to make me a bit more self-aware, and I'm going to have to work with that because it is the goal of this program to flow naturally. Although I'm generally mindful with my words as they come, but there is no script. Now there will be a transcript, and it's going to go all the way back. As many of you know, as I've said it before, one of the reasons that I flow spontaneously now on various topics is because I was very determined not to make this show what we call an infomercial, where it was not an active discussion pursuing truth. And that is very relevant to the topic today, where we live in a world right now where fear, although people may admit that it is fear, but at some level it's fear, is driving dishonesty. The truth can have various viewpoints surrounding it in the attempt to surface what is actually true. It's often been said, for example, that history is written in the words of the victor, going all the way back. You know, you go back to ancient cultures, ancient Rome, for example, and how there are a lot of things we don't know about the leaders of that time, what was actually happening. And people have spent an entire lifetime, there have been multiple lifetimes of people trying to understand what really happened. When we come to the place of exploring truth with an honest, loving heart, even acknowledging our own blinders that we may have and do have. When we really work with ourselves to reflect, when we truly want to explore, then we are headed away from fear. Truth is not partisan. Truth is not in the hands of just one group of people and not another. Truth is actually both an individual and a collaborative exploration when there are those who honestly, diligently want to explore what is real. I was very tempted to capitalize the word reality in the description for today's show, and that would be very valid in terms of discovering the evidence of spiritual truth. But it goes beyond that. It is everywhere, and it's so obvious. It's right in front of you. Just how uncomfortable, because of the intense partisanship of our times, that people, and if they're not uncomfortable, then they haven't worked with themselves. I mean, I have to believe that deep down, intelligent people know when they're conveying things that are meant to sway an opinion but are not based in actual reality. And it can happen in many contexts. When we're working with ourselves, we may be attempting to sway reality in a certain way. We are tempted to be on a certain page, even if that page isn't real. And this is becoming more important in our world, because there are those who believe that because of their opinion or their agenda, they can dictate what truth is. Truth isn't about dictation. Truth is about truth. It's about honest exploration and not being afraid to have that be explored. It's the most difficult work that we can do. We all do it imperfectly. During the last show, I talked about AI. In fact, I want to correct something about my own work in AI. I said in that show that in my thesis work, it wasn't formally AI. Well, it wasn't identified, because I was at a school that didn't really claim to be doing it. In those days, AI was kind of, in fact, during the early days, even when before I was a graduate student, only some people really pursued it. It was a very odd field. I think there was even a hesitancy sometimes to admit if people were pursuing it. Now, when I first did it, that was in an AI group and an AI lab. That's what I meant by formally AI. I was using the AI language Lisp, although in my graduate work I used Lisp too. And it was, in every way, an extension of AI. It was a part of that exploration in those times. So, and in both cases, it was about, the first was language modeling, and this relates to truth, by the way, because I was asked as an undergraduate in an internship to create a conceptual model in the English language, because every language could be different. This was for a natural language interface prototype. It was all very well-meaning, but it was at the beginning of really exploring this. And so I had the opportunity to, just by being in the right place at the right time, do some trailblazing. That doesn't mean that others weren't pursuing something similar in parallel. I didn't have my PhD. I didn't even have an undergraduate degree yet. But I was doing original thinking about how to do this. And it was through linguistics. I know I was guided to that. Somebody told me to look into linguistics as to how they structure things. And, you know, we embedded this model that I created because I was a writer and I could think conceptually, and it was put into the AI language Lisp. It was AI. In graduate school, I was involved in visual language modeling. In fact, anyone, you can still find references quite quickly to papers that were based on the project that I was involved in. But it was not formally in an AI group, or it wasn't an AI professor. And yet, the part of the project especially that I was working on, although really all of the project, it had to do, my part, with modeling graphical objects and how you could set up rules in an editor that could be modified as it was running with new types of objects, how you could set up rules so that people could define more and more complex visual objects in this editor. So how you would operate on these objects within a visual editor when you were building something. And this was a part of the Superconducting Supercollider project in Texas. And I, once again, at the time and for years, I thought, you know, that wasn't the most glamorous project by any means. Not to say I was looking for glamorous. I wasn't in this. I hardly knew how I got into that school. I never expected to be working where really major things were going on. And yet I did very well. I didn't think, so many times in my life, and here's a bit of honesty about yourself. What are you capable of? What are your strengths? You may be capable of much more than you realize. There are so many aspects to exploring honesty about reality, including your own reality. And I did very well at one of the most difficult schools to pursue computer science. And yes, I've said it before, I had the opportunity but did not understand what the project was, nor did I join it, although I could have. I had the option to be a part of what became the first real, in any sense of the word, there are all kinds of debates over what was the first of this, what was the first, and yes, there had been other work in this area, but this became the first real web browser recognizable in the ways that we do today. It was called Mosaic, and you today know it as Firefox. We have the obligation now to face what is going on with AI today. And the problem is we as a society have never been mature enough to be going down that road. In fact, to be going down any number of roads. And when it comes to data and data manipulation, where we want to massage reality, it's not reality. It's massaging the data. Garbage in, garbage out. When there are agendas that want to ignore actual data, which don't even have the courage to have discussions, honest discussions about data, and want to suppress data because there is an attachment to an agenda. We exhibit our immaturity as a people, as a species. We have raced ahead, and we're not mature enough to handle this. We're like a child with a box of matches, although even children are mindful enough generally, not to play with matches. How we get through this, how we survive our current era, I do not know. I was watching a movie over the past couple of days that was very popular some years ago. It's not that old. I think it came out in 2010, called The King's Speech. And it's about the beginnings of World War II in England. And it's a really touching story about relationships between people and how this teacher who had no formal credentials, in fact, that comes up at a certain point in the movie, helped the future King of England with a speech impediment. But you can't help but see in the movie how what was going on in that time, you know, the beginnings of World War II. See, the problem we have right now is in the hands of an immature or even diabolical group of people, if we can't handle the true responsibility of AI, and honestly, there's no evidence that we can, because everybody is afraid. It's like they all know that they're not allowing full truth to come through, that they're uncomfortable. You know, AI is a wonderful truth teller under certain circumstances. In fact, quantum computing, a beautiful truth teller when used to do data analysis. It will surface actual data, not how you want the data to look. We have become so skewed in our pursuit of science, in our pursuit of just about every discipline. There are all these agendas and not an actual, honest, let's meet on the bridge exploration of what the truth actually is. And that includes, very much so, exploring evidence of the supernatural, of the spiritual. But I'm not going to give how we attach to certain beliefs a free pass either. Because when I started out as a voice, which I never really expected would happen in my life, a voice in the spiritual community, what I talked about most of all were these beliefs that take hold of us. And lately, I cannot help but hear it here and there. You know, people who care so much are, you know, that they want to pursue truth, and yet they're clinging to this idea of health. And you have to go deep in your heart. And don't listen to those things that say, oh, you're denying, you know, don't follow your heart, don't follow your conscience. It negates God more than anything I can think of, to think that there would be this concept of hell, especially the torturous hell. You hear people talking about this, and it's like, it's an utter denial of what love is, and it just breaks my heart, because we have such an opportunity to move forward. And this has been with us in different ways, in different cultures. It's not just in one place where we have to believe in these violent, violent, brutal entities dominating us. It doesn't lead to a good place. You know, I always come back to 1 Corinthians 13. And I'm going to come back to, I was going to start today with this part of it, which I've talked about before. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails. I can't even imagine anymore. I've been through this in my life, dealing with this belief. More the fact that it just doesn't fit. The anguish of actually believing in something like that, when you really face it. And it does, in different ways, affect us very deeply. And that's not the only thing that we're dealing with here. But we have to be honest with ourselves about what we really believe. What our conscience will allow us to believe. What every sense of what is compassionate, empathic, decent behavior, whatever word would ask of us. But that's not really why I decided to talk about this topic today. It's a part of it. That has more to do with a belief. When I'm talking about exploring evidence that is out there and being honest about reality, we are literally, although we may be helped, and I actually believe that we will be, because I don't believe in a strictly material world. I don't see evidence of it either. It's not just a belief. I have seen evidence. There is more to this reality than the materialists claim. And you can't explain it unless you go down the road of saying, well, it's some kind of a simulation. Well, you know, I think all of us can accept that we're having some kind of growth experience here, some kind of an exercise. But that's not the kind of simulation that they would attribute it to. They would have to say, well, you know, it has to be some material species having a simulation, and it makes it look like there is spirituality within the simulation, just like a computer game. Well, sure. You can consider that if you like. It's a fair consideration if you're a materialist. But what is it that gives you justification to be a materialist? Can we be open to exploring evidence? I believe there's a tremendous amount of evidence out there about reincarnation that really can't be explained. And that's how I started as well in the spiritual community. Surfacing evidence I couldn't explain. Evidence that was so powerful. I was at work and I showed a friend and she almost fainted. And it was right there in front of you about soul groups and the resemblances from age to age and even between behavior and appearance at times. And especially when it's a group of people. I stumbled into this. I wasn't really intending to. And yet, I've been hesitant to work in that area. I haven't been called to do more work, and maybe I will be. I'm thinking, you know, my research needs to go deeper. But you see, I worry about the maturity of our society. I'm not so sure we can handle confronting that. Only the most, it takes great reflection. It takes maturity to handle that kind of information. Because just like our lives today are imperfect, lives in the past were imperfect. We all struggle with what we're willing to accept as reality. We may have been taught to fear certain ways of looking at reality, like many have been taught to fear a reality in which there is, ironically, no hell. When honestly, the reality to fear, which can never be consistent with any definition of a loving God or divine or however you want to express it, would be that projection of such horrendous behavior, because that's what it would be, horrendous behavior, beyond comprehension. And yet we just soften it and, you know, we ignore it. People just throw it around. They don't even think about, you know, what about loved ones? That's how this started, you know. You know, that question, how can you be happy in heaven with loved ones in hell? Oh, you'll just forget about them. Oh, tell that. I mean, what about someone who's just pivotal to your life? Even a stranger should be troubling. But we gloss over it. We're not honest with ourselves. And it's got to be causing anguish, at least for some people. This is the way we need to face how we explore the truth about our reality. We're not going to see it all, but far too many times, taking it back into just the mundane, non-spiritually oriented world, although you can't really be there, but be honest with yourself. Yes, there will be transcripts of this show. I know that I had people in the past, come on, they say what they say, and I was helping, you know, I wasn't one to get into a debate with somebody who had a new book out. And that troubles me a bit. I'm really glad that there are these more recent episodes, and I'm not saying all the past episodes were that way, but it would happen sometimes. And, you know, that's where we really are exploring truth, when we're willing to have an honest discussion. Like when you're willing to say, hey, I just don't see it. I don't see how that could be true. Or have you ever thought about this? I mean, there were discussions like that, but not enough. There were times we need to, exploring truth invites us to have the most active discussions and from multiple points of view. And that's how viewpoints shift towards truth. When we're honest and we really want to know. I'm not going to go too long today. The live show is coming to an end. And I thank those of you who have been listening live. If you are reading this, how interesting. I hadn't really thought about that up through all these shows. And there are many, well over 500, that some of you are reading these words. Well, I'm happy that this show, being more conscious of this, was very much compatible with how I typically would do a show. Maybe a little more mindful, but not too much. I don't want to be too introspective when I'm talking. I want to flow. I want to be myself as much as possible. So thank you for being here. FrontierBeyondFear.com is the site. Also on the show page, there is a way you can help support this show, a new way, by exploring an offer from Gaia, which they have a wide range of videos. I invite you to look into that too if you'd like to support the show. So thank you, everyone. I the live show is done now, but I am going to end the show because I don't have much more to say, I don't think, today. So I appreciate you being here across time, whether reading or listening. It would be different in reading. My voice is different. You can't quite get the nuances of a show from a transcript. That is a bit of a problem. But I think that I feel okay with it. I think it's a good thing. It's heading in the right direction. So I should be here next week, although I don't know when you're listening now since I'm in the podcast portion. But thank you again for being here. Also, a note about I do have an upcoming appearance at the New Living Expo in the San Francisco area, and that information is also on frontierbeyondfear.com. That is April 19th through 21st, so 2024. I have no idea when anyone is listening. That's part of the excitement of doing a podcast, part of the intrigue. It's like, and now it really is like writing these words down. You don't know where your words will travel, where in the world and where in time, and where we will be. Let's hope that we are mature enough that we find the maturity to productively make our way forward as a species. Thank you, everyone. I'll see you next time.